Good evening to the assembly. Is this loud enough? Or it is? Okay, good. I think you know that some of us were at Tassajara Zen Mountain Center not this last week, but the week before for 5 days. And on the way out of Tassajara, Rose was driving, and we had some of you in this room were in the car with us, and we decided on the way out to have an impromptu hootenanny, and it was pretty, it was kind of an amusing event, because at most we could remember one verse to any particular song that anybody would bring up. And then we started calling ourselves the Broken Jukebox Band because of this poor memory of lyrics. One song that we didn't sing at that time was a song that I sometimes break into at various points. It's by Percy Sledge, and it's called You Really Got a Hold on Me. So in the tradition of the Broken Jukebox Band, I'm going to sing one verse. Get ready. Let me get ready. I don't like you, but I love you. Seems that I'm always thinking of you. Though you treat me badly, I want you madly. You really got a hold on me. That's the that's the first verse of that song. And with apologies to Percy Sledge, I was thinking that that song, that could be called the Song of the Deluded Mind. And the reason I say that is because of the deluded mind is also sometimes called the confused mind. It doesn't know what it wants. And it swings. And it swings between, oftentimes between aversion and attachment. Back and forth between aversion and attachment. So just like this song, I don't like you, but I love you. Seems like I'm always thinking of you. Though you treat me badly, I want you madly. And, you know, and this mind has really got a hold on me. So that's the song of the deluded mind. And our practice, one of the features or revelations of our practice is that it shows us whatever mind we have. And sometimes this mind is like that. Sometimes this we have that mind that is swinging between I want and I don't want, I need and I don't need, between aversion and attachment. And this can be rather painful, as it says in the Dhammapada. We can have a mind that thinks he abused me, he beat me, he defeated me, he robbed me. For a person that goes on thinking like that, like this, suffering never ends. And so one thing that keeps us coming back to practice is to be released from the mind of aversion and attachment, and released from this mind of resentment. as I quoted in the Dhammapada, and to be released from our self-centered thinking in general, from the grip of a mind that has a hold on us, that is not, you know, is not a helpful hold, but a hold that actually makes our life quite a bit less wonderful. And so over the years of my practice, I've had quite a few opportunities to sit with and be taught by Tenshin Reb Anderson, who we mentioned in our ceremony tonight because he's just had a hip replacement and is recovering from that. I haven't heard any negative words about his recovery, so I'm assuming he's recovering apace. That's a fairly invasive operation, and he's had several operations on his hip leg area there over the last 20 years or more. But anyway, I hope he's recovering well. One of the things that I wanted to bring up that Reb used to say, I don't know how long ago that he was bringing this up. Seems like it's been a while since I heard him say one teaching, original teaching, I would say, that he used to say that if he had to wrestle a tiger, he'd like to be locked in the trunk of a Volkswagen with the tiger. And he used to bring that up, quite a few times. So, in other words, if he had a problem, if he had some big problem, he wanted to be in close contact with that problem. He wanted to be intimate with that problem. He didn't want to run from that problem. In fact, he wanted to be really close to that problem. And that's the way he wanted to work with that problem. I think that's a good, that's a very good teaching, because oftentimes when we have a problem, there's a tendency to want to run away rather than face whatever it is and meet it with mindfulness and compassion and study it. Carefully study this, whatever this problem might be that is making your life less wonderful. And one of the powers of Zazen is that it can raise, first of all, it brings us face to face with whatever is coming up, right? Whatever is troubling us or not troubling us, but if there's something troubling us, or if there's some tiger, some issue in our life, and many people, of course, come to Zen practice because, there's some tiger in their life. This is a fairly common entry point for people. One of the features of Zen practice, if you're up for it, which you kind of have to be if you want to practice this way, is you come face to face with the pain, with the difficulty, with the problem, whatever the tiger of the moment is, you come face to face with it. And one of the powers, I would say, of Zazen is that it can actually arouse the energy to face whatever it is, whatever is coming up, whatever you're wrestling with. And so Zazen can give us the courage, give us the courage to face what is difficult and what is hard to. That what because oftentimes our problems seem more powerful than us, right? And when our problems seem more powerful than us, or difficulties or decisions that we have to make, they seem bigger than maybe we have some feeling that this is too much. It's too big for me to decide or to meet, but Zazen can has this power to give us the courage to face those things that are hard to face, hard to wrestle with. So anyway, I was thinking of this theme of wrestling, and I hadn't thought of that story that Reb used to say. I mean, it's not much of a story, but it's an analogy that he used to bring up. And I thought of this story that I didn't know much about, which is another wrestling story. And it's in the Bible. So probably some of you know this story. It's called Jacob Wrestling with the Angel. And it's in the Old Testament. So I didn't know too much about this story. So I looked it up to see what the nature of this wrestling match was. And what I learned was that Jacob, who was, he was a person of the Old Testament. I don't know what he was, a prophet, I don't know. But anyway, he was a spiritual seeker, let's just say that. He was a spiritual seeker, and he was on a journey with his family to Canaan, wherever that is. And somewhere in the old area of the Old Testament. And he was on this journey with his family, so they came to this river, and Jacob sent his family across the river, and he stayed on the near side, or the side they had come from, to pray. And he prayed into the night, and at some point in the night, someone came upon him and started wrestling with him. And they wrestled throughout the night. He wrestled throughout the night with this person. And by morning, he realized that he was wrestling with an angel. And the angel actually was God. He was wrestling with God himself, or herself, or itself. And the angel blessed him and gave him a new name, which was Israel. So that's the story from the Old Testament as I heard it. And in this further research, I found that Rainer Rilke wrote a poem that is features this story, or is centered around this story. And the poem is called The Man Watching. And it's a rather long poem, but I'd like to read it to you. It starts with the image. This is to help you, because I found that in Dharma talks, it's hard to follow a poem sometimes, right? So I'm going to try to read it slowly, and I'll give you a précis of the beginning of the poem, which is that there's a storm, the image of a storm that comes up at the beginning of the poem, and which seems to represent uncertain forces that are shaping our lives. And you could think of it in terms of the forces of aversion and attachment. I'm not saying that's what Rilke was thinking, but anyway, there's a storm, and it it has the feeling of this unseen and somewhat ominous power. And then after the third line of the poem, the nature of the storm changes, and it becomes something more beneficent and something with greater meaning and less ominousness, but actually something that might he calls it the rearranger. So I'll start with the poem. I'll try to read it slowly and see if you can follow it. I can see that the storms are coming by the trees, which out of stale, lukewarm days beat against my anxious windows. And I can hear the distances say things one can't bear without a friend, can't love without a sister. Then the storm swirls, a rearranger, swirls through the woods and through time, and everything is as if without age. The landscape, like a verse in the Psalter, is weight and ardor and eternity. How small that is with which we wrestle. What wrestles with us, how immense. Were we to let ourselves, the way things do, be conquered thus by the great storm, we would become far-reaching and nameless. What we triumph over is the small, and the success itself makes us petty. The eternal and unexampled will not be bent by us. Think of the angel who appeared to the wrestlers of the Old Testament. When his opponent's sinews in that contest stretch like steel, he feels them under his fingers as strings making deep melodies. Whoever was overcome by this angel, who so often declined to fight, he strides erect and justified and great out of that hard hand which, as if sculpting, nestled round him. Winning does not tempt him. His growth is to be deeply defeated by even greater things. So I'm going to go over a few of those stanzas again. After the storm swirls and rearranges the landscape, the poem says, how small that is with which we wrestle, what wrestles with us, how immense. Were we to let ourselves, the way things do, be conquered thus by the great storm, we would become far-reaching and nameless. To me, this sounded like the teaching of our school. To be conquered thus, to give ourselves to the teaching of thusness. A few weeks ago, John Work was here, and he was talking about bodhicitta. Bodhicitta is the rising of the wish, the aspiration, to be in close contact, to be locked in the trunk of the Volkswagen with the teaching of thusness, with the mind of freedom and liberation that benefits all beings, to be in close contact with that mind. To be conquered thus by the great storm, becoming far-reaching and nameless. You could say that bodhicitta is the desire to be in that intimate, transcendent wrestling match without any sense of winning or defeating anything or gaining anything. Like Reb in the trunk of his Volkswagen, like Jacob with the angel. Bodhicitta is the aspiration for that kind of intimacy with the Buddha mind. When I was at Tassajara, one of the things that is that when you come to Tassajara, you haven't been practicing, you know, with that community before, and you haven't been practicing in just that way. I don't practice that in just that way. I practice every day, but I'm usually by myself. But when you come to Tassajara, and there's some, you know, 80 people or something in the zendo, it's very impressive, and the silence in that room, it seems to for me act as a kind of catapult into a more settled and, if I may say so, deeper sitting zazen. And I felt the power, you know, I felt the power. I think it's almost impossible to come there and not feel the power of the practice that is happening in that room and in that valley. It's just palpable from the first time you enter the zendo. And I came to feel that we so much need that kind of power, and what that power enables, which is to pull back, and it's kind of to pull back our projections of self and other. That having that kind of power in our life is so helpful to pull back our projections, which you which can sneak up on you or influence your relationships and ability to, you know, meet other people. You know, if you're projecting stuff onto other people, it's really hard to meet them. Don't you find that? If you've got ideas about another person, you can't see the person. And I noticed this, you know. I noticed that there are ideas there that are still, like, getting in the way. And I also noticed that the power of the practice to help us continually pull back those projections so we can really see ourselves and others clearly and without overlay of prejudice, judgment. So anyway, it's good to go to a place that helps you see that, you know. This is how the poem ends. I'll repeat this as well. And so I abbreviated a little bit, but just to make it a little bit clearer. Whoever was overcome by this angel He strides erect and justified and great out of that hard hand which, as if sculpting, nestled round him. That's the image of the wrestling match, right? Hard hand which, as if sculpting, nestled round him. And then this final line, winning does not tempt him. His growth is to be deeply defeated by even greater things. By ever greater things. His growth is to be deeply defeated by even greater things. So, you know, our dream. We have a dream. If we're allowed to have a dream in Zen, our dream would be to be overtaken by Buddha's meditation. Not just to be, you know, doing Buddha's meditation, but to be overtaken, be subsumed in, be enveloped in Buddha's meditation. If we have a dream, this is a dream that we might have. To be conquered thus by the Tathagata's samadhi. I think this is what it means to be deeply defeated by ever greater things. Ever greater things. We often use this. We often use the words letting go. Letting go. But letting go it's good. Letting go is a good word, a good phrase. But we have to be careful about it, I think, because is there somebody who's letting go? Is there somebody doing the letting go? If there's somebody doing the letting go, then it's a little bit tainted, I think. Letting go, you know, just be within letting go without, you know, anybody doing any letting go. You don't need the doer of letting go. Let letting go, let go. And Dogen, of course, he got the phrase from his teacher, which is dropping off body and mind. He got that phrase from Ru Jing, his teacher. And, you know, in Zazen we might make some effort. We might make some effort to drop off body and mind. We might make some effort to let go. But ultimately, there's just dropping off. Dropping off. Just dropping off. And so, yeah, we can make some effort. And we do make some effort. And I recommend making some effort to sit upright and to, you know, breathe gently in and out through your nose. And, you know, but not, you know, not to banish thoughts, not to banish thoughts. Just let thoughts come and go, and be completely patient with that process. And then, you know, and then an angel might come. It's possible, an angel might visit, and the angel, you know, would. Give you a new name, and you would become far-reaching and nameless with a new name. So, maybe I've said too much. Thank you very much. Yes. Question.
Well, regarding Rev Anderson's phrase in the Volkswagen, that's funny. Anyway, I assumed that, well, I assumed when you said that, I'd never heard him say that, but that he would be referring to meeting the tiger or wrestling with the tiger in a container, and the container is close. And I think that the container, I just assumed he'd be referring to Zazen and the forms. So, just, I don't remember what you said. I don't think that's exactly what you said, but.
Well, you said it as I wished I had said it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jim. So when you said what did you say? Pull back projections, I thought, well, that's a little too active. Release is better, but then, or let go is better, but then later you said, well, let go is too active too. And I agree. It's more like maybe making yourself available to what's really out there. And you could call the effort to do that, letting go or releasing. But, you know, it's a beautiful talk. I really like the poem. Thank you. I never heard it before. It reminds me, your talk reminds me a little bit about that Dylan song, It's All Over Now, Baby Blue. It's related. Leave your stepping stones behind. There's something calls to you. Look out, the saints are coming through, that kind of thing. Thanks very much.
Well, I was taught at an early age that really what you were supposed to do with your mind and speech was judge everything and make opinions about everything. And this is the example that I was presented with. For you know the early years of my life, and there is the shape, you know, the storm shapes the landscape, and this is, I mean, we've all been shaped in some way, and some, you know, and in some, you know, cases we've been shaped very gently and sculpted by a gentle and loving hand. And then in other cases, people have not been shaped and sculpted by a gentle and loving hand. So it just, you know, this is, each of us, you know, has to study our own karma. That's what I recommend. Yeah. And you know, if all your projections, if there's someone here whose projections are all I see is Buddha, then I don't say pull back that projection. Keep, you know, that's okay. You know, if all I see is Buddha, if that's the way your projections are, then please continue in that way. For me, it's necessary to constantly study my projections and pull them back. That's just the situation over here.
There's that karmic overlay you mentioned. We each have our individual influences. But don't you think that that aversion, attraction, judgment, mind is inherent?
No. I mean, not originally, no. I think it's learned.
My view is that it's inherent, that we make judgments about survivability. It's evolutionarily developed in order to enhance life.
And evolution is learning, right, though? That's learning, isn't it?
Evolution gives us the capacity to learn, but evolution just... We can talk about this later.
Jim, thank you for your talk. You spoke about Tassajara and the pool and the feeling there. And I just want you guys to know, when I first started sitting here as a group, I felt a tremendous amount of help from you all in my meditation. And it was powerful. So thank you.
I'm also thinking about this trunk of the Volkswagen in terms of the container of our practice. And also thinking about the tiger as what the practice evokes from within us. The tiger is ourselves. And often when we're in that container and we're very uncomfortable with our own tiger, we want to split and project. And being at Tassajara this time, I was reminded of, one could say, sometimes it appears that that tiger is something about us that we often don't feel comfortable with or don't like, and we might think it's the worst of me. And I was thinking about Tassajara as a container in which it often brings out the worst before it brings out the best, I was reminded. But the worst isn't really the worst, it's
right.
The gift. And there's so much intimacy that it is often quite uncomfortable. And to this point about pulling back the projection, which is an expression that I also really like, I just wanted to add the piece of the split and project. You know, that's the thing we have to see, is like we split off often in this container from the tiger, or whatever it is we're uncomfortable with, and we put it out there, and in effect are saying, not me. And the longer we keep it out there rather than get into the trunk of the Volkswagen with it, the longer this problem persists. So that's the direction of my thinking, and thank you for your talk. Really appreciated it.
You're welcome. I'd just like to say that you're right about, I mean, I feel the truth of, things get worse, and that was the way. But everything, you know, when I first went to Tassajara, I thought I was, you know, I had been practicing for quite a while already, and I thought I was pretty well versed. And then I saw that, you know, actually living with people, that's what really put the meat on the bones of my practice, and you know, And making mistakes with people, hurting people or being. But it is all such a tremendous teaching, you know, because it's a container that is, it's that container is meant for that purpose. It's meant for making mistakes and seeing your mistakes, and it works like that, and it really helps you, recover from your mistakes too, and try to do better. So it's that container is very very wonderful, and anyway, what is he? It's the poem said something about growth. Anyway, it said that. Oh, it says his growth is to be deeply defeated by even greater things, and or ever greater things. And one of those things could be your mistakes, too. Those are great. You can make great mistakes and be defeated by them, and yet not defeated. Michael.
It may be a stretch, but I feel like that song lyric that you first spoke of could also be thought of as sung to the tiger inside that container. I don't like you, but I love you. Tiger is not pleasant, but I'm intimate with you.
Right. Well, that goes to Kristen's point, you know, that of the split, you know, that, you know, you remember that everything that appears out there is, you know, part of you, and it can be recovered, it can be recovered, and it can be wrestled with and recovered.
Thank you, Jim, and everybody. I just was really appreciating, or actually loving and enjoying, the sense of the angel wrestling with me. It's like, wow, that's pretty really horribly amazing, because it's almost like, as long as I'm sitting zazen, as long as I'm, you know, having that intention, I can kind of count on that the angel will be there, you know, and I like basically saying, in a way, it's not about you. It's about this vastness. It's about everything. And just makes me smile, this angel.
If we were in the car, we'd go, just call me angel of the morning, honey. Just call me thing. Before you leave, and this would be, and that's how, as far as we'd get, because we would not know any other words, right? That's how the band rolls.
I have this like photograph of a big, like big boar, and there's a baby lying on the back of the boar, and that somehow captures this for me too. It's like we're being carried by something so big, and yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Far-reaching. Thank you.
Thank you for the talk, Jim. And I also really appreciate the tiger in a Volkswagen trunk image. The Dylan song that came to mind for me was "I Shall Be Released." So. an intention in my own practice that I've been, you know, kind of sitting with is what I've been thinking of as reducing the space between my practice on, you know, the cushion and life, and realizing reducing isn't the right word. It's, again, too active, that letting go is more appropriate. I'm wondering if there's a similar opportunity to let go of the distance between that feeling of a practice community and that, I'm trying to think how I want to say this, the ability to then let go of the projections, you know, that we place on other people, and the distance between how, you know, that feeling. I felt it last year at Tassajara, and obviously, unfortunately, couldn't go this year. But and then being away from that in life. Does that make sense?
Have no distance.
Yes, I guess, again, with my original intention, how to keep that more in everyday life.
Yeah. I kind of got lost in your question there a little bit.
So did I.
But it did remind me of the poem. What did it say? It said, I can hear distances say things that one can't bear without a friend, can't love without a sister. I love that line. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we are distant from our practice or from our own sense of integrity, then, you know, those distances say things that are hard to bear, and that we can't love without a sister, without a companion, without a sibling, without, you know, someone to care for us, who cares deeply for us. So, you know, that. Now I'm thinking of I Shall Be Released. I don't know. They say every distance is not near. So, I mean, it is. I think the real benefits of practice, or the real evidence that practice is working, is when it shows up in daily life, you know, and we find ourselves saying the kind word, being flexible, not holding on to fixed views, that's when it shows up, you know. It's sort of like, I kind of, you know, you might think it's showing up in Zazen, and you might have that feeling too, but, you know, when it shows up in daily life, what do we call it? The reward body? Sambhogakaya. The reward body. I think of the reward body of Buddha. You know, that's where it shows up in daily life.
Rose has something to say.
Yeah, I guess so. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stealing the mic. Go ahead.
When we were in Tassajara, you had us do an exercise with poetry. And you were prompting us questions to write down the one-liners. And my response to one of those prompts was, why me and why not me? And I felt like I was in a container Atasahara, and why not me? And I was filled with joy to be able to lean into it and work with it there in that special healing place, to be comforted by the group, the community, to be in those healing waters. It was pretty powerful, both the exercise and just being there for that moment of why not me.
So you reminded me of something. Years ago, I was walking down the hallway at my workplace, and I saw my now supervisor speaking with one of my colleagues, and the colleague said to my supervisor, talking about a judge, she said something like, "Oh, she's really good at judging things." And my supervisor said, "Aren't we all?" I never forgot that. But wrestling the tiger in the closed container of the Volkswagen, I thought your talk was interesting, and it had a certain tension in it between that, and that's the kind of person I am, to wrestle these problems and try to understand them intimately and to define them and to drive myself crazy. The tension between something that's so simple as letting go, which is almost an active word, it's an active concept, a surrender in the active sense, and how easy it is to forget that. So in my practice, you know, I still tend to keep getting caught up in problems, and I still wrestle with these problems. But then I find myself taking a step back from this intimacy and just asking, what is this? Leaving it there, and usually something in terms of a solution will pop up the next day or 2 days from them. It's very interesting. So what do you think of that, tiger wrestler?
It's a common experience, you know. They wrestle for a while and then let it go. And oftentimes, between the wrestling and the letting go, the answer and how to go take the next step, I've had it happen so many times. You know, you can only wrestle, you know, all night. That's it. You have to stop at dawn. So just stop wrestling and take a break and you know, trust that something from the deep well of your consciousness will show you the way forward, or show you at least the next step. I think it works marvelously. You know, our minds work marvelously like that, outside of our conscious endeavor. You know.
And when you started speaking about the hootenanny, I projected right away and said, "I've already heard this."
Thank you, Jim. I feel most fortunate for you that I wasn't in the car with you, because sadly all the songs I know are by Bob Wills, and I do know the verses to them.
Oh.
So yeah. If you don't like country music,
you might have been ostracized. I don't know.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, I would like to say that I was struck by the beginning of your talk and the strong feeling of attachment in the verse to that song. And I guess if my practice has a goal, I would hope to be able to arrive at the point where I am able to respond to the present moment based solely on the current situation and circumstance, and not what I may throw on it.
Just arrive and arrive and arrive and arrive. Yeah. Constantly arriving.
Continually, yes. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.